And from Paxton, a high three-quarter angle on the fastball. He's 6'5". He's a left-hander. That fastball mid to upper 90s with a slider, a cutter, and a changeup.
2-2 delivery. And Springer drives it pretty deep to right field. Going back on it is Cruz. Still going back. Looking up. See you later. A leadoff home run for George Springer. And the Astros have a 1-0 lead.
Welcome to another Astros podcast.
Talk about a press of right there, Robert. Going the opposite direction on a fastball from this left-hander. Riding it the other way. Nelson Cruz just staring at it. Barely even moved in right field. Getting things started for the Astros in the second half with flair.
Welcome back to Astro Launch, everybody. This is Steve Sparks, and I have Doug Fister, winner of the game last night for the Astros against the Mariners. And your former team, it's always probably good for you to come back here to Seattle where you came up to the big leagues originally.
Yeah, it's always a warm welcoming here. They've got a great fan base, and it just kind of seems like almost home, you know, from the past years. So it's definitely a nice place to come back and pitch.
Doug, I was always wondering, since you pitched in Detroit and Washington also, and you've played with a lot of great pitchers, it's talking with Felix Hernandez, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, is there any one common component you've seen in those great pitchers that you tried to take something from?
I've definitely been truly blessed to be able to play with a lot of great players and pitchers, and a lot of it comes down to what my first manager here in Seattle, Don Wakamatsu, always told us, that this game in the major leagues is played from the shoulders up, and a lot of that is played into on the mound as a pitcher. It really becomes a cognitive way of playing the game. You have to know what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and why you're going to do it, and have a reason for it. And I think that's what kind of separates the physical throwers from the pitchers, and from being good to being great. And that's something that I constantly strive for.
At what point in your career did you hear what he said and were able to apply it?
That was like my very first year of baseball and trying to apply it right away. He was always strong on don't try and figure it out. Don't try and finally figure everything out, because once you figured everything out, you're going to quit getting better. You're going to get complacent, and a lot of things are going to spiral out of control. And I took that to heart right away. For me, I've always tried to constantly stay in the simple processes of things and trying to, return to the basics.
I want to switch gears for a moment with Doug Fister. Your family has been involved in either police work, or your dad was on the SWAT team and things of that nature. Tell me about your brother a little bit, because he's starting to change jobs and switch gears himself.
Yeah, my brother, he was an EMT there for a while, quite a few years working for an EMS company back home. But now he had the opportunity to, take the law enforcement route. So he's now in the academy, and I think he's 3 or 4 weeks deep now already. Yeah. So he's busting his tail out there and getting ready to, go out and serve.
Doesn't it make your job feel insignificant to what those guys are able to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whether it's, law enforcement, fire, first responders, military, it doesn't matter. Yeah. The service that they do, the willingness to give up so much, is something that just puts our job into, and life into complete perspective.
For me, it seems like your work ethic and your discipline stand above a lot of people. Do you think it has a lot to do with your dad's upbringing, raising you guys and having that background he had?
For me, I attribute everything to that. Mm-hmm. Being around my dad and obviously his teachings, my parents, but also being around the law enforcement, being around firefighters, there's a strand of brotherhood there, and everybody's got everybody's back, and you don't ever want to let any teammate down or any brother down, and that puts forth the focus to know that I've got to go out there and put the work in behind the scenes and let the team and my brothers know that you can trust me. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try and be consistent and be successful in whatever we do.
Last thing, Doug, you've been around some good teams. You've been on some playoff teams. You got a pretty good feeling about this clubhouse and this group of guys?
You know what? I really do. This is a great group. We've got a young group, but also we've got some older guys in certain leadership roles. So, I think we took our lumps and bumps early, and I think that was a good thing for us, and it really taught us a lot about ourselves. It allows us to figure out what it takes for us to come back from a deficit and swing our way out of the bag, be able to get up there on the mound and pitch your way through, you know, a shutout game or something. It's something that you learn from your failures and as a team, as an individual, that really brings you closer. It is something that you do have to learn from, and a team has to come together to, you know, overcome those challenges, and we've done that this year and have continued to roll and play well together.
There you go. That's Doug Fister. Doug, thanks for catching up, and keep it rolling.
Thank you.
Back with more Astro Lunch right after this.
The following minute of Astros history featuring Larry Durker is brought to you by Minute Maid. Minute Maid, put good in, get good out. Here's Dirk.
It wasn't like Ken Caminiti was a secret. His minor league exploits were legendary. The acrobatic plays at third, the powerful arm, the RBI bat. He would become the Astros' third baseman. It was just a matter of when. On this day, July 16th, the Astros couldn't wait any longer. They called him up from AA Jackson. He introduced himself to the 20,000 fans in the Astros Dome with a couple of sensational fielding plays to save runs for Danny Darwin. Then in the seventh, he tied the game at one with a solo homer to right center off Kevin Groves. It was still tied to the ninth when Cammy walked with one out. Greg Reynolds sent him to third with a single, and Gerald Young plated him with a hit as Darwin went all the way to win 2-1.
Thanks, Dirk. Minute Maid believes that whether it's families or juice, when you put good in, you get good out. That's why you can count on Minute Maid to deliver delicious, refreshing goodness in every sip. Minute Maid. Put good in, get good out.
Welcome back. Robert Ford joined by Astros third base coach, outfield coach Gary Pettis, and just had the All-Star break here and the All-Star game this past Tuesday. Of course, Will Harris and Jose Altuve part of that game, and you've been part of a couple of All-Star games as a coach when you were with the Texas Rangers under manager Ron Washington. Rangers winning the American League pennant 2 years in a row, so you were part of Washington's staff at the All-Star game in 2011 and 2012. And I mean, first of all, that has to just be quite an honor to just be associated with the All-Star game in any capacity, right?
Well, yeah, it is. You know, you get to see the best athletes in our sport, see them compete against one another, and just to have an opportunity to get to know the personalities of some of the guys. I mean, it is just a short 3 days span, but right. You know, everybody seems to be in a very good mood, and I do know, although they would relish the time off, it is a fun event for them, and it was for me as well.
And they, whenever I hear people talk about that, those 3 days with the All-Star game, they always talk about how, you know, even though all these guys are from different teams, everybody becomes one team. It seems like it gels really quickly. Did you see that happen?
Well, yeah, you know, and what happens is during the season, guys get to know one another a little bit just right. from playing against one another so many times. And so then when you do meet them at the All-Star game, the ice has already been broken, so the warming period is kind of already over, so they kind of get down to just sitting around talking and enjoying one another in the clubhouse.
Was there anybody that – anything about the experience that really surprised you?
Well, just the amount of time that is required of the players, mm-hmm. Not of the coaches, but the amount of time that's required of the players, my gosh, it's just an all-day thing every day for them. So I'm sure that most people don't realize that, but just seeing it, you know, up close, I certainly appreciate what those guys do and go through during the All-Star break.
Now, what was your responsibility for those games? Were you coaching third base for those?
I was at first base, I think, for both of those. Yes, I was coaching first base at the time. I hadn't moved over to third base.
So was it one of those things where, I mean, you just have all these All-Stars coming up. Did it change what you would do normally at first base, or you just kind of just treat it as, all right, I'm just going to do the same thing that I normally would do?
Yeah, baseball is baseball. You know, the situations may change, but, you know, you still have to play the game. So, you know, knowing the situation and what I would normally tell a player on my own team, I would tell the All-Star player the same thing, because, in fact, they would probably already understand what I'm saying, but you never want to think that they know exactly what you're talking about, so you just say it anyway. And if they know it, great, and if they don't, then you've covered all the bases.
Is there anybody that you met, any players that you met, that really surprised you at all, or that you felt like you got to know a little better from your time with the All-Star team?
No, I kind of stayed away, you know, just kind of said hello and greeted them as they came in and talked to them briefly. But I kind of let them have their own time out there and do what they want to do. They had enough stuff going on without having to entertain me.
Well, Gary Pettis, Astros third base coach and outfield coach, thanks for joining us and sharing your All-Star experience. And hopefully you'll get to be a part of another game with the Astros staff.
Well, and that's what I was going to say earlier, is that although I would relish the time off, being in the All-Star game means that we did something special the year before.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Back with more of Astro Launch right after this.
Robert Ford, Steve Sparks, on your radio, the Houston Astros Radio Network.
The Rangers were in Boston earlier this month for a series. Three infielders on the left side. First pitch to Iannetta is a strike on the inside corner. And so Jake Diekman did, like a lot of people do when they go to Boston, decided to check out the bar Cheers.
Yep.
The exterior of that bar Cheers, of course, was the same exterior for the bar in the television show. 0-1, swing and a miss, strike two. Good breaking ball from Davinsky. Although, if you've ever been into the actual Cheers bar in Boston, you realize the interior looks nothing like the interior of the bar in the TV show.
A little different, but Carla's still there.
She's not. The 0-2 is low and away. That woman you saw in Cheers, that was not Rhea Perlman. I hate to break it to you.
Thought maybe she dyed her hair.
So anyway, Jake Diekman visited Cheers in Boston. The 1-2, that's outside, decided he wanted a souvenir, so he got a Cheers mug and put it in his backpack, and then later went to take that mug out of his backpack. However, the mug had broken in his backpack.
And grown teeth.
And he didn't realize that it had broken. 2-2. At the knees for strike three. Froze Iannetta with a fastball. And that's back-to-back K's for Davinsky. Mariners down to their final out.
That's downhill gas right at the knees.
Perfect pitch by Davinsky, 94 miles an hour. So Diekman reached into his backpack to get this mug he had bought from Cheers, didn't realize it was broken, and wound up reaching and getting one of the broken shards and cut his index finger. And now on the DL. First pitch to Martin, and that's lifted in the shallow left. Mariznick running in. He'll have to play it on the bounce. And the Mariners are still alive in the bottom of the ninth. Martin at first with two out, with the Astros leading by four.
Well, Martin, no dummy. He didn't want to get to that secondary stuff and notice that Davinsky is pumping in strikes, so he got that first fastball.
Now it's Sean O'Malley, who has reached both times since replacing Ketel Marte in the fourth inning. Marte leaving the game with a mild ankle sprain. O'Malley, a two-run double and a walk. Valbuena steps shy of the grass at third. Outfield shaded the other way against the switch hitter batting left. First pitch, and that's inside. O'Malley turns out of the way. But yeah, could you imagine going on the DL for something like that? Cutting that index finger?
I can't imagine a more bizarre baseball injury.
Oh, I can imagine a few, including one that sidelined my broadcast partner once upon a time. The 1-0. Swing and a miss, blew a fastball by him. That's why whenever we go into any booth, we make sure there are no copies of the Yellow Pages anywhere near, because we don't want Steve Sparks to dislocate his left shoulder once again trying to rip a phone book in half. We would not want that to happen. We're looking out for you.
I appreciate that.
1-1, changeup taps softly right side. Altuve waits on it. He has it, throws to first, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros take their first game of the second half in the first game of this three-game series in Seattle, defeating the Mariners 7-3. So certainly a good way for the Astros to begin the stretch run.
Visit astros.com/radio to hear all your favorite players, up-to-date interviews, highlights, and more. Get connected with your Astros at astros.com/radio.